and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
How about that?
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
Let's get him hard.
Pedro Fernandez.
Better grab me quick before my knees give way.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the multi-multi-million-dollar Sports Byline Studios on Fisherman's Wharf here in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California. Welcome. This is hour number two of the Sunday edition. My name is still Pedro Fernandez, of course, 35, make that 36 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Ring Talk is the longest running fight show in history. So if you are joining us for the very first time, let me welcome you to the family. If you've been here a while, you know what time it is. This hour, I'm going to focus on the greatest. That's right. Born Cassius Clay back in 1942, Louisville, Kentucky. Talking about Muhammad Ali. Not only the Muhammad Ali, the boxer, Muhammad Ali, of course, the spokesperson. Muhammad Ali outside the ring, inside the ring. He probably had more influence outside of the ring than he ever did inside the ring and some of the things he did, of course. And maybe we need an athletic leader like that right now in the United States. Somebody to step out. Maybe who could it be? Is there anybody that really is? Could mimic Ali or could step up and take the position, the posit that Ali had once time. You can give me a call on that if you have an opinion. 1-800-878-7529. Is there somebody out here that could be an Ali in boxing? Is Tyson Fury an Ali in boxing? I mean, could he do something outside of boxing? Tyson Fury's feeding the homeless. Could he do something outside of boxing that would be monumental? Of course, could he? Think about that. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. The Guilfrey No Commitment text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Welterweight Lucas Santa Maria, now 11-1-1, son, WBA number 13th ranked contender. Michael Fox last night, 22-2, 5 KOs, a 10-round unanimous nod. That was at the Microsoft Theater in L.A. as well. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. This is a Sports Byline production.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
You use so many big words, how would you trick a man?
I'm not going to trick you. You know I'm not going to trick you, Mom. Wouldn't think of doing it.
You're being extremely truculent.
Whatever truculent means, if that's good, I'm there.
You are not a stupid boy.
Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell, we'll get to that in a bit. Bottom line is, let's talk some boxing history, of course. August 7, 1942, Carlos Monzon, the murderer. Of course, the ex-world middleweight champion, the guy that pushed his girlfriend off that balcony down there in Argentina. He ended up going to jail for it. But get this, the jail was having his own apartment, and he used to get to leave on the weekend. So he was on a weekend leave with another woman, and he turned over the car and got into a car accident. He was drunk, and he died. So when I say good riddance, Carlos Monzon, born on this day, take that back. August 7th, 1942. August 7th, 1979, Salvador Sanchez. Remember him? Maybe one of the greatest Mexican fighters of all time. It's not maybe the greatest of all time. People say that maybe he was untested because we never know because he died early. Of course, that car accident in 1982 or 83. But his his father fought Felix Trinidad. I kid you not. And got, no. His father fought Salvador Sanchez. I'm talking about Felix Trinidad's father fought Salvador Sanchez. That was in Houston, Texas. That was on August 7, 1979. And Salvador Sanchez stopped him in 5 rounds. So Trinidad Sr., not quite the fighter as his son was. Bottom line is, Salvador Sanchez, the star, was still rising at that point in time. August 7, 1982. Dwight Muhammad Cauley, formerly Dwight Braxton. Of course, he changed his name when he converted to Islam from Philadelphia, stopped former world champion Matthew Saad Muhammad, born Matthew Franklin, before he made the conversion. Matthew Franklin was one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. The fact that he went to war in the manner in which he did, I mean, he went to war, put his face out there, and just took incredible amounts of punishment. I used to, people watching the broadcast, they see me on the split screen here. Of course, we got Ali and Frazier in their second battle going on the TV, and the split screen has me shaking my head because that was just, that was rough. Watching Matthew Saad take that punishment from a few guys, it was pretty crazy. Anyway, Matthew Saad stopped by six rounds to retain the WBC light heavyweight crown. Eventually, he would lose that. He would move up to cruiserweight. Dwight Cauley would, and of course, lose to Evander Holyfield. 8-7-97. Roy Jones took care of Montel Griffin. Of course, Montel Griffin was a guy that had a DQ win over Roy Jones. That was in Ledyard, Connecticut. Jones suffered his first loss to him on a foul 6 months earlier, I believe. In Atlantic City, on the 9th of 1980, Alexis Arguello stops Boza Edwards. Both guys I know Alexis well. Boza I knew okay. Boza was a good guy. Boza was a class guy. And Boza, I think that I did the sparring with Bazooka Limon before you beat him for the WBC Super Featherweight title, so I think you owe me some money. Yes, you can put the check in the mail. Anyway, Alexis Arguello stops Boza Edwards on the 9th of August 1980 in 8 rounds with a display of body and head punches. Man, he was like amazing. He was 130 pounds, an explosive thin man. The explosive thin man was at his peak at 130 pounds, I think, without a doubt. In August 9th, 1943, future world heavyweight champion Ken Norton, who my historian, or his story, talking about Bill O'Neill, Grandmaster Bill O'Neill, thinks was a paper champion. I guess he was, because he never won the title in the ring, although you see him celebrated with the other champions like Ali and Foreman and Frazier. He's in that picture, you know, the greatest of the greats and that kind of good stuff. And, of course, he did give Ali hell 3 times. And, of course, the first fight he beat Ali, broke his jaw, and Ali either went 10 rounds or 1 round with a broken jaw, whoever you want to believe. Anyway, 10 rounds or 1 round. But then Ali won the second fight. In the third fight, of course, it was very controversial in Yankee Stadium, a 15-round decision. And the reason why I bring this up is that I think it was about 2000, 2001, a bunch of us were in Sacramento, California for a presentation. I was the master of ceremonies. Muhammad Ali was there. Larry Holmes was there. Ken Norton was there. And George Foreman was there. The only one who wasn't there was Joe Frazier. And why wasn't Joe there? Because Joe was a troublemaker. Joe would have a few drinks and start trouble, man. And Joe was a different dude on booze. I ain't lying. I mean, he just was a totally, totally different dude. I mean, when he was like, golly gee whiz, and everything was fine, that's when he wasn't drunk. You put a couple of drinks in Joe Frazier, man, and he became one of the meanest dudes. Sonny listened too, I was told. But I saw Joe. I mean, I saw Joe get mean. I saw Joe drunk in the dress room at the Omni in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, Von Bean was challenging Evander Holyfield that night for the World Heavyweight Championship. He was working the corner of Von Bean. I walked into the dress room. I smelled all this booze. I said to myself, man, this smells like some cheap bar in San Bruno. Like some cheap tavern in San Bruno. No. Guess what? They were drunk. Both Butch Lewis, late Butch Lewis, and Joe Frazier were like drunk as a skunk. And of course, Von Bean went out there and fought Evander Holyfield. And throughout the fight, Joe Frazier yelling stuff like honky at the referee. You don't do that. You don't do that. And you're the former heavyweight champion of the world. And why am I on an anti-Joe Frazier rant right now? I don't know. Anyway, it just got into my mind. But I'll never forget when we were in Canastota, New York, and he was charging people for autographs. He was. He's the only heavyweight champion in the world I've ever seen. I saw Joe DiMaggio charge for autographs one time, but I never saw any heavyweight champion. I never saw a boxer charge for an autograph. I never saw it in my life. And he was charging for autographs. And guess what? The line wasn't that long. It wasn't very long at all. I mean, I think he was charging $10 or something like that. But the bottom line is, you know, Larry says I'm hard on the guy. The Godfather Larry Merchant says I'm hard on Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier came from a humble beginning, and you know I credit him for what he did. I mean, as a boxer, he beat Muhammad Ali the first time, and although I thought the decision was quite controversial, and had Ali not played around, it wouldn't have been controversial. But he played around, and of course, he getting knocked down in the 15th round. But people say to me, yeah, Ali got knocked down in that 15th round, but it wasn't the 15th round. Joe Frazier did the punishment, man. It was like in the 12th round. I mean, Ali was like, he admitted he was on Queer Street, no doubt about that, and he was just out of his mind. Anyway, August 9th, 1943, Ken Norton and I are sitting in I'll go back to the Ali story. Ali, Norton, myself, Foreman, and, we're all up in Sacramento, California. And Norton is still making cracks about Ali, you know, making faces at him and this and that, like tough guy, growling at Ali and this and that. And it's making me a little bit uncomfortable, you know, because Ken's not the most eloquent guy in the world. He could be a bit rude or crude, okay? And he was starting to get crude, and I was afraid this was going to get out of hand, you know? And I've got to MC this event. All I got to do is get these guys for it. I got to get these guys out there on stage. I'll do the presentation. They'll all say a couple of words, and we're done, and we all get paid, okay? So he's kneeling Ali. We're on these stairs about to go onto the stage in Sacramento, California. And he's kneeling Ali, giving him a bad time, back and forth, this and that. And Ali looks over at him, and he says, "Champ, remember that third fight? I think you may have got the best of it." And Ken Norton, being the pass hole that he is, and you can take the pee off of that one, okay? But the bottom line is, Ken Norton started crying. It was uncontrollable tears. And I'm not talking about sobbing, just tears coming out of his eyes, because he couldn't believe it that Muhammad Ali had finally sort of vindicated him to an extent. I mean, that was his vindication. That really, without a doubt, made Ken Norton's day. Kenny, I got to give you some props. You showed a little bit of class after that. Of course, Kenny and I were supposed to do a new Year's Eve gig, I guess about 1998, somewhere in 1999, in Miami, Florida, for some Cuban promoter down there, along with Harold Smith. And he showed up, and he didn't get his money. He didn't get his money. So you know what happened? He left town. I got my money. I got my money in advance on that one. Sorry, man. I didn't trust the guy we were going in there. Anyway, but I got my money in advance. He didn't get his money in advance. He only got half of it. He wasn't getting the rest of it until after the event was over. He said, "I'm out of here." Kenny was on the first plane back to wherever he was from. I think it was California, I believe. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Check it. 35, make that 36 plus years. Now you're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. The Muhammad Ali special continues after the break.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The Dramatics. Man, my boys. Of course, Detroit, Michigan. That's what they call home. Didn't sign with Motown, one of the non-Motown acts. Of course, Ron Banks, lead singer for a long time, the founder of the Dramatics. He passed away about 8 or 10 years ago. He was such a good, fun guy to be around. And of course, L.J. Reynolds. Last time I saw him in Oakland, California a few years ago, he didn't recognize me, so I felt a little hurt about that. But, you know, we spent some time together over the years, but people forget, man. You come in contact with thousands of people. I mean, every day of your life, you're in a different city meeting a different person. You can't remember that person you smoked a joint with like 15 years ago. Just kidding. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Somebody asked me, when was the first international prize fight in history? Well, Billow couldn't even come up with that one, but according to my stats, the first international world title prize fight was Jack Stack of England beating challenger M. Petit of France in 29 minutes. That was in England. And get this, it took place July 29th, 1751. So boxing's been around a long time, no doubt about that. Now, back in the day, there was a tag team on TV. They were the greatest tag team of all time. And I'm not talking about wrestling. I'm talking about Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell.
A year ago this month, at 4800 San Jacinto in Houston, Texas, this man refused to take a step. For the past year, he's been virtually incarcerated in this country. He's undergone all of this for the obvious reason that he didn't have the courage to fight such as Joe Frazier, Jerry Quarry, and Jimmy Ellis.
Why would you say that? I didn't have the courage to fight Joe Frazier and Jimmy Ellis and Jerry Quarry. I mean, why would you say that? I mean, you know, I've never showed no fear of nobody. And why would you, as many times as you have came to my fights, knowing you had money bet on other people, I beat them. I mean, why would you, seriously, I mean, why would you sit here on television and talk about me being a Fred or Jerry Carr or Joe Frazier? I mean, that's wrong. I mean, we just don't get along no kind of way.
And you've been spreading that kind of gospel at every college campus
every
in this country.
I go to every college that I go to, everybody asks me about Howard Cosell. Why is it that you and Howard Cosell can't get along? And my answer is, we just don't get along. I mean, you just talk a lot of stuff that don't make sense. I mean, why would you open up the show and you told me you would ask me a few nice questions. Why would you open up the show talking about I'm afraid of Joe Frazier and Jerry Quarry? You really believe that they have a chance against me?
Well, I think...
You come to all of my fights. You follow me all over the world. Germany, London, Canada. And while I've see you at ringside talking about these homemade champions. Now, do you really believe they could beat me?
I'll answer that question in a moment. I first want to document your record. You were troubled by a less-than-mediocre southpaw named Mildenberger in Germany.
Well,
you showed me nothing against Schiavallo, relying upon the fact that he gave you water on the knees with low blow upon...
You've never seen me hurt a beat. What you mean I didn't show you nothing? that's the kind of appreciation I get from you coming all over the world. The company wouldn't pay your way to these countries for nothing. If I wasn't fighting so regularly, you wouldn't have gotten to see the world. And now you're going to down me because I'm not fighting and talk about I got trouble with these boys. I beat those boys easy.
Now, wait a minute. This marvelous wristwatch. What were you frightened of? I wasn't going to hit you. Why did you move?
I mean, why would you jump over here?
Because I want the people to see the wristwatch that you bought in Frankfurt, West Germany.
Yeah.
Only because... I found the person who'd sell it to you more cheaply than anybody else in the whole country.
Well, for once you... But, well, after all, I mean, what's you getting me a deal on a watch? If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have got to see Germany.
All right. My record is clear.
I will shuffle again. Don't you worry. You get your homemade champions ready and line them all up. I'll be watching the television with you at ringside, popping off about how hard he hits and this and that. You let Ellis and Quarry fight it out and then let Joe Frazier meet the one or whoever the homemade champion is, may say the Mickey Mouse title. I have a belt at home. Says world heavyweight champion. And for a man to be the champion, he's going to have to take my belt. And the day that he meet me, and if he beat me, I'm going to hand him my belt. And I want you to be the announcer that night because I want to see you quiet. I want to quiet you at once and for all.
Ah, you son of a gun, you've had enough fun with me. You know that the one guy who has persistently maintained that there is one heavyweight champion in this world is Howard Cosell. And I have said repeatedly that
you're
you could
right.
beat all
you're
of
right,
these
but
guys.
But you make a lot of cracks. I mean, you just said I had a lot of trouble with these boys, and you're talking about me getting out of boxing in time to duck Frazier and this and that, and I don't know what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. You don't look as broke as you're supposed to be.
No, what you mean, broke?
Everybody says you're broke. You got no money. You gave it all to Elijah Muhammad.
No, how could I give it to Elijah Muhammad? I mean, the government, the American government, took 90% of all of my money before I got it. You know that Lowell Sponsoring Group had that deal called the Joe Louis Tax Law.
The fact of the matter is, the thing you've missed most over the past year were the steady vocal sparring sessions that we enjoyed on Wide World of Sports.
Well, we had a lot of fun, but let's let the other boys have a chance and build some more contenders. After beating Zoe Foley, you know, no one was left for me to fight. So I think even if I was still fighting, it would have been good for me to step aside for 2 years and let them fight it out to see who deserves the honor to fight me.
It's been fun. We've missed it.
Well, things make it better soon.
One more shuffle.
Well, if I do the shuffle, you might have to scuffle.
We've done that, too. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Things will get better soon. Did you hear him? That's what Ali had to say. Things will get better soon. He was talking about his personal life. Of course, the Vietnam War going on as we speak. 58,000 people would eventually die in the Vietnam War. But, you know, looking back at the Vietnam War, it sort of is dwarfed by this, by the COVID virus having killed 160,000 people in like less than 4 or 5 months. So, man, 58,000 people in Vietnam, almost 200,000 people here as far as COVID's concerned. I hope you're practicing the safety that you need to practice. You know, social distancing, wearing the mask, this kind of good stuff. I mean, how can it hurt See people out there who sent me the emails and this, and you sent me a bunch of emails saying that, you know, that I'm off my rocker, this and that, that the virus isn't what it is and this and that. The virus is what it is. Over 10,000 people have died in California. Six people that I know have died. Six people that I personally know have died from COVID-19. And they weren't close friends, but they were friends and they were acquaintances. There are people that they can't call anymore. So this virus is for real. And whether you want to play games with it and maybe pass it around to your kids, have your kids pass it around, go back and forth, get your mother catch it, your father catch it, these older people catch it, these people with immune deficiencies like diabetes and this, or maybe prior cancer patients and this and that. I mean, they're going to be toast. They catch this virus, they're going to be toast. So I'm asking you to please be as diligent as you can, no doubt about that. Back to boxing history, of course. Wow, I want to run this one. Boxing's first heavyweight title fight was with 3-ounce gloves and 3-minute fights, 3-minute rounds. That was fought between John L. Sullivan and Dominic McCaffrey. That was on August 29th, 1885. Wow. And the first female boxing match ever took place in 1876. I mentioned this, March 16th, of course, New York City, I believe, was the Old Garden. Nellie Saunders and Rose Garland hooked it up in the first female fight boxing match ever in the city, in the state of New York. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA, talking about some of the impressions that Muhammad Ali would leave on people. And I've tried to tell you in the past that, you know, he touched people. I when we stopped that train in the middle of China, I mean, I'll bring you back. We're on our way from Guangzhou to Shanghai, and I think we're going home. Second trip, 94. I went there 3 or 4 times. This was our second trip. Anyway, so he decides, he's antsy. Let's stop the train. We've got our own train. I mean, like, nobody else on the train. We've got our own train car, our own private car with an engine and a caboose, but the caboose turned out to be the bathroom, which was really a hole in the middle of the floor. That's a story for another day. But anyway, he said, let's stop the train. Let's see something. Let's see some. We're in China. This is Ali. Let's see some. So we saw a couple of a village. We saw some, you know, huts and that kind of stuff. So he said, stop here. So I get the guy to stop. And that wasn't easy, getting the guy to stop the train. It basically had to threaten his life almost, because, you know, he's on a program and he wasn't going against the program. Sort of like one of them horses that you rent and you take out there on the trail. The horse is not going off the trail no matter how much you crack the, you know what I'm saying, beat him up. He ain't going. Okay. And this guy didn't want to go, but eventually he did go. Anyway, I'm looking at the big picture. And the fact that, you know, Muhammad Ali has been gone now for, what, 4 or 5 years, almost 5 years now. Will be an athlete like him ever again. Never will be a personality like him again. And I say to myself, you know, why? Because he was one of a kind. That's why. I mean, the greatest, maybe not the greatest boxer of all time, maybe not the greatest fighter of all time, but one of the greatest human beings of all time. I mean, I told you about the fact that we were in Macau and we were at this orphanage with kids with one arm and one eye and one kid didn't have an ear. And I mean, it was the most horrific pictures of handicapped kids you could ever imagine in your life. And they weren't pictures. It was real life right in front of us. But that's where he wanted to go. We didn't want to go visit the governor. We're supposed to go visit the governor of Macau. And he said, screw the governor. He didn't say it like that. But, you know, hell with the governor. Let's go to a hospital. Let's do something. So we went into this hospital, and I said the kids were, like, you know, as deformed as kids can get. Because in China, if you have a deformed kid, you don't take them in. You don't keep them. You put them out on the street. You just dump them. You just discard him like he was a piece of, he or she, like they were a piece of trash. So anyway, so we're at this orphanage, and, you know, we're all looking pretty, you know, let me put this, pretty happy because of the fact that, you know, we're going to bring some sunlight to these people's faces. And as well as at this convent, they had a bunch of old men, like an old man convent too. So they had old men and they had kids, two different sections of this convent, and the Catholic Church was running it. Anyway, Ali says to me, give me your money. I said, what? Give me your money. So I gave him my money, $400. He ended up collecting about $1,200 total. That's what everybody had as far as our little party was concerned. He gave the nun the $1,200. What did she do with it? She put it in her pocket, and she said, this is enough money to feed the kids and the old men for a year. $1,200, we left them with enough food money for an entire year. Now, see, that's something you don't hear Joe Montana doing. Sorry, Joe, but there's only one Muhammad Ali. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA, of course, come to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. We've concluded the first two Muhammad Ali-Joe Frazier fights as far as the television portion of this broadcast is concerned. I'm doing the radio end of it. You can watch both at Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I guess about, what was it? This was about 2008. Sam and Dave, Sam showed up at a concert for Tower of Power and he sung that song, I kid you not. So he was like 80 years old, still rocking and rolling. Of course, we're celebrating the life of Muhammad Ali today. And the reason why I say that is that you gotta bring something positive into it. A lot of negativity out there. People are fighting tensions are at an incredible high here as far as my lifetime's concerned. I've never seen it this high in my entire life. I'm 62 years old. I've never seen racial tensions this high ever. I mean, I'm not talking about a civil war or anything like that, but it doesn't look like the people. I mean, remember when Rodney King said, can't we just all get along? Well, unfortunately, I guess we just can't all get along. But this guy knows what he's talking about. Let's have some fun. Let's hear some Muhammad Ali.
People are afraid of George Foreman. They talk about how hard he hits. The world has been deceived. You listen to me now. I've never told you wrong. The man don't hit hard. He knocked Joe Frazier down 6 times. He got up 6 times. Joe King Roman is Tokyo, Japan fight, the Puerto Rican champion, knocked him down 3 times. He jumped up 3 times. He knocked Ken Norton down 4 times. He jumped up 4 times. When have you ever saw the man say 7, 8, 9, 10, count his man out? When I hit Sonny Liston in the second fight, he stayed out for the count of 10. Zora Foley stayed out for the count of 10. Cleveland Williams stayed out for the count of 10. What few I have knocked out, stayed down. Sugar Ray Robinson knocked him out for the count of 30. Joe Louis, Marciano, Jack Dempsey, Jack Johnson, Archie Moore, Ezra Charles, they knock him out cold. So this man has never knocked nobody out cold. He's a bully. He's slow. He has no skill, no footwork. He's awkward. And I have been giving him a name. I named Floyd Patterson the Rabbit. I named Sonny Liston the Bear. And he shall be known officially as the Mummy. The Mummy.
And why the Mummy?
Because he fights. When he's fighting, if you ever watch him in the ring, he drags like that after his opponent. And how's a mummy going to catch me when you're fighting a mummy? You just keep a step ahead of the mummy. See? Yeah, just move on the mummy. No, mummy, I'm over here. No, mummy, I'm over here. Yeah, no, you're moving too fast. The mummy don't move that fast.
Do you ever get frightened before a fight? Do you ever get nerves before a fight?
I'm nervous, but not frightened. I'm nervous because I have a great insight on, I just don't see the audience. Every camera, I see millions of people. Like, the Frazier fight was watched by 1,000 million people, which is 5 times the population of everybody in the United States. Just a picture arena with 1 million people. I imagine you couldn't see them all. And just think about 100 million and 1,000 million and all those people and everything. That makes me nervous. Just the idea of me just being a humble fellow from Kentucky, got lucky in sports, and now here's the house. The fight was piped in a place like Thailand to the government house in Arabia, and the government officials took time off to watch the fight. And just for 2 men boxing, attracting so many people of all races and nationalities. In Hawaii, I understand, they stopped, closed all the factories, and the people, they set televisions on every street corner. People came out watching the fight on the streets, and every bar in America, every house, even traffic was still during that fight. In Madison Square Garden, 10,000 people couldn't get in, and just over one man, and just imagine all them people watching you, that makes me nervous until I get started.
And then no nerves at all?
No. My thinking is so superior, and my knowledge is so positive, and my logic is so wise, until it clashes with the mentality, which is down here, and I'm up there. So by me being so high, I can see more and see farther than you. And you're looking up at me saying, Ali, don't do it. Ali, please stop me, it hurts. And you're on a job making 60, 70 pounds a week, or whoever this guy is. Never been out of the country, not known in his own neighborhood. Ali, don't do it. But I'm at such a high level until I don't think like you. I'm not like you. I know I say you, I mean the other person.
But you know why they say that. I mean, it's for the
because
best possible reasons. Though.
They are fear and they are wary. It looks dangerous to them.
That's
but
right.
It's not really that dangerous to me.
No problem. This will be the biggest upset since Sonny Liston. And I think it is befitting that I go out of boxing just like I came in, defeating a big, bad monster that nobody could destroy. A hard punch. I'm the underdog. If he hits me, I'm in trouble, like the Sonny Liston fight. But I came back and I shook the world and I got Liston. Now it's 10 years since Sonny Liston. I'm meeting another big, bad, strong monster, knockout artist that beats everybody. Sonny Liston knocked out Patterson twice. And I was supposed to fall, but he didn't knock me out. Because he could hit hard, but he couldn't find nothing to hit. George Foreman knocked out Ken Norton, knocked out Joe Frazier. True, I didn't knock him out, but I'm so fast, I'm so hard hit, I'm so scientific. I'm a total different man from Frazier Norton. Listen, David, when I meet this man, if you think the world was surprised when Nixon resigned, wait till I whip Foreman behind. I'm telling you, David, I'm down to 215 pounds. Right now, I said it when 215. I'm fighting weight already. I usually train 6 weeks for fight. I've trained 4 months for fight. I'm chopping trees. I've done something special. I've wrestled with an alligator. I've tussled with a...
I believe you totally. I believe you completely.
I have tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. Now, you know I'm bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock. Injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Poem. You got 1 minute?
1 minute,
easy. Poem goes like this. People say, what's going to happen? You meet Joe Frazier again. Here's how the fight's going to sound on the radio for those who can't afford to buy the expensive theater seats. And the fight goes like this. Ding, Ali comes out to meet Frazier, but Frazier starts to retreat. If Frazier goes back an inch farther, he'll wind up in a ringside seat. Ali swings to the left. Ali swings to the right. Look at the kid carry the fight. Frazier keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's a matter of time. There Ali lowers the boom. Now Ali lands to the right. What a beautiful swing. And the punch lifts Frazier clean out of the ring. Frazier's still rising. But the referee wears a frown, for he can't start counting till Frazier comes down. Now Frazier disappears from view. The crowd is getting frantic, but our radar station staff picked him up. He's somewhere over the Atlantic. Who would have thought when they came to the fight that they would have witnessed the launching of a colored satellite? I don't pay no attention to what they say about me. All I do is just do what I have to do and get paid, and that's it. But I don't really pay no attention to the rules of boxing. I don't pay no attention. I defy all the rules. I've added pages to the book of boxing. I have this game as such a thing now until boxing promoters can no longer afford my shows. I have governments like Iran ready to put up $10 million for me to fight Joe Frazier. I have governments like Cairo, Egypt, wanting to put up $6 million for people like Ron Lyle. I have countries all like all back
back throughout Zaire, talking to Mobutu, he wants him back again. They'll put up $5 million for return with Fulman. When we talk about $10 million and $6 million and $4 million, this is unbelievable. And they don't expect to get the money back. They're promoting their countries and their ideals. So I've excelled so in this sport of boxing until Madison Square Garden is too small. Yankee Stadium is too small. The Houston Astrodome, the biggest promoters in the wealthiest Americans and Englishmen you can get for promotions cannot just promote me no more. You understand? So I've not only added pages to boxing, but I added new sections to the boxing book.
Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time. When I beat Sonny Liston, I told you today I'm still the greatest of all time. Never again defeat me.
Never again
say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again
make me the underdog until I'm about 50 years old.
That's right.
Then you might get me. But I didn't dance. I didn't dance for a reason. I wanted to make him lose all his power. I kept telling him he had no punch. He couldn't hit. He's swinging like a sissy. He's missing. Let me see your box. I hadn't started dancing yet. You can't say my legs are gone. You can't say I was tired, because what happened? I didn't dance from the second round on. I stayed on the ropes. When I stay on the ropes, you think I'm doing bad. But I want all boxers to put this in the page of boxing. Staying on the ropes is a beautiful thing with a heavyweight when you make him shoot his best shots and you know he's not hitting you. I would have gave George Foreman 2 rounds of steady punching, because after that he was mine.
A billion people watched that fight. 1 billion people watched that. I kid you not. 1 billion people watched the third fight. I'm talking about the Ali Frazier fight, the thrill in Manila. The first fight, of course, March 8th, 1971. 300 million people watched that fight worldwide. 300 million people. You don't see them kind of audiences now. I mean, you know, Floyd Mayweather doesn't draw that kind of audience. No UFC star is going to draw that kind of audience. It was a special time, no doubt about it. And, you know, as I look at back at that picture and Ali talking about all that money, he didn't get a lot of that money. It was back in the days before the Muhammad Ali Protection, the Muhammad Ali Boxing Act, of course, which was enacted by Senator John McCain, which basically left the Las Vegas big-time casinos and promoters sort of out of the loop as far as any penalties were concerned in the world of promotional boxing. But the Muhammad Ali Boxing Act basically said that the promoter had to tell each fighter what he was making. Imagine if a promoter was telling Ali he was getting $15 million from this city and $15 million from this country and $15 million from that country. I mean, how much money Ali would have really made? Because Ali only made like $3.5 million for that second Joe Frazier fight. And I think he got $5 million for the fight in with Foreman there in Zaire, Africa. So $5 million on a $1 billion event. Man, talk about, I mean, I talk about the UFC guys getting pimped off, but think about that. Doesn't sound right, does it? I mean, you create $1 billion and you get $5 million out of that? $1 billion, $5 million? Doesn't work. Anyway, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. Ali's final record at the end of the day, of course, 56-5, stopped once October 2nd, 1980. Of course, that was the fight that sent me back to my hotel room at the Aladdin Hotel in tears. I mean, I didn't think he was going to win. I wanted him to win, but, you know, he was fighting Larry Holmes, an undefeated Larry Holmes. I think Larry was like 27-0, 30-0, something like that. But he was young, he was hungry, and of course, and he had been Muhammad Ali's sparring partner for the Joe Frazier fight. In fact, he was, he was beating Ali up back in 1974. I mean, he was a guy that was an amateur up till 72, I believe, Larry Holmes, but in 74, and the Deer Lake, Pennsylvania training camp that Ali was preparing for Foreman. I mean, Larry Holmes was putting a beating on him. And Larry told me he used to have to hold back punches because, you know, he wanted to be hurt, didn't want to hurt the guy that's paying you. I mean, he's a star. He realized that. But 56-5, 37 KOs. The first fight against Tony Hunsaker. Pretty funny guy, Tony Hunsaker. He became a fireman. Was a fireman or a buster? I think it was a fireman there in Louisville, Kentucky. He was a fun guy to be around. I had him on the show a couple of times. Him talking about Ali and how Ali treated him like gold after seeing him a few times after their fight. Of course, that was Muhammad Ali's pro debut. And, of course, the end of Ali. The end came. Trevor Burbick, that was in Nassau, the Bahamas. Sad day. I watched it on Channel 26 here in San Francisco. It was like the first pay-per-view channel ever. That was December 11th, 1981. Of course, that was just a couple of months after watching Leonard and Hearns on home pay-per-view. That was really the first big home pay-per-view match where they were just pushing. I know HBO had done it previously, I think, with the Ali Frazier fight, the third fight. But the bottom line is,
man, they the Foreman fight. But bottom line is Trevor Rurik was the end of Muhammad Ali, December 11th, 1981. It ended in the Bahamas. I think Ali won one round in that, and Burbick let him win that one round. I was of the opinion that Burbick respected him that night, overly respected him, and didn't try to take him out. That's just the way I felt. I wish, you know, I wish it didn't end that way. Of course, when you look at Ali and the fact that, you know, the boxing did the residual effects from professional boxing, Parkinson's aside, man, it destroyed him. I mean, whether he died or not a happy man, I don't know, but he died a damaged man. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. These are the Shy Lights from Chicago. I never got to hang with these guys. You know, I got to hang with a lot of groups, but never got to hang with these guys. They were pretty cool.
1 month ago today, I was happy as a lark. But now, I go for walks. To the movies, maybe to the park. I have a seat on the same old bench to watch the children play. You know, tomorrow is their future. But for me, just another day.
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet, and many people believe he'll be the next heavyweight champion of the world.
I saw Sonny Liston a few days ago, Cash.
Ain't he ugly?
He's
too ugly to be the world champ. The world champ should be pretty like me.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
How does that grab me?
Well, I'll tell you right after I get violently ill.
That was Jim Jacobs interviewing Muhammad Ali there, the former world handball champion, of course, the manager of Wilfred Benitez and Edwin Rosario, and the guy that put together all those fights for big fights, the films, down there, of course, now Jay Bright's running it, I believe, in Las Vegas. August 11th, ESPN Plus got a fight between Joan O'Carroll and Maxie Hughes. That's a lightweight bout going down. That's Tuesday. Friday the 14th, Telemundo's back with Ricardo Espinoza versus Brandon Valdez. These guys are fighting at 122. The same date, the 14th, Friday night, The Zone's going with Felix Cash versus Jason Wellborn. The next day, Saturday, ESPN's going to go with Frampton Comes Alive. Carl Frampton, former champion at 122, taking on a guy named Varun Vardaman. Anyway, they're hooking it up at 130 pounds, which I think is way too big for Mr. Frampton. Also on the 15th, the best women's fighter pound for pound, and that ain't saying much. Cecilia Brack is taking on Jessica Maskell at 147 pounds. Also on the 15th, a kid that's disappointed because of his cocaine issues. If he can get straight in his life out, he might be a good fighter. Anyway, I'm talking about David Benavidez, undefeated out of Central California, defended the WBC super middleweight title against Romer Angulo. That's going to go down on Showtime on the 15th. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You know, there's a million things you can be doing right now. The fact that you're listening to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network and Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Well, my name is Pedro Fernandez, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite, and of course, all the podcasts are at anchor.com. The executive producer, the great Scott Cuddy. Thank you for listening.